Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is Dana calling from the city of Chicago, where John McEnroe won his last singles title in 1991, and I was there to see it. And you are listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, and thank you to Dana, who introduced our show just there. Who knew that John McEnroe won his last ever singles title in Chicago in 1991? I think the answer to that question might be David Law. Did you know, David?
I did.
Of course you did.
Took no time at all for that to just click off in my brain the moment Dana said it. So thank you for that reminder that I didn't need, Dana.
Thank you very much, Dana. If you would like to introduce a show, then that option is available to you via becoming a friend of the Tennis Podcast. The link to do that is in our show notes, as always. Matt is here. Matt, how are you doing?
Hello. Very well, thank you.
91 was very much before you were born.
Yes, I did need the reminder. Thank you, Dana.
Matt said in a WhatsApp group this week with me, David, and my brother Math, the WhatsApp group that I think is still called Alcorazmataz. Mm-hmm. Matt said the words, "That makes me feel old."
What was he referring to?
Tough crowd for
I
that.
I got in
Matt.
Trouble
tough
for that.
Crowd.
Some of us are grey.
Was that because Arthur Fies was born in 2004? Was that what I was referring to?
I think it was, yes. Because tennis has been happening, folks. And despite the fact that, with all due respect, the tournaments that have been on, none of the sort of individual tournaments have felt like they're sort of massively significant in the tennis calendar. We are in that sort of slight nether zone that I always think must be very hard for the casual fan to understand, in between the Australian swing and the Sunshine double and the swing leading up to that. We're in the sort of, there's some outdoor tournaments, there's a sort of separate clay swing happening in South America, there's some European indoor events happening. It's all a bit sort of confusing, but we have had some really cool, electric, exciting young players bring themselves to our attention over the last week or so. And one of them is, of course, Arthur Fies, who makes Matt feel old. That's how young he is. And we're going to be talking about all of them, provided we've remembered how to do a podcast. It's been a couple of weeks, hasn't it? I'm very sorry to report that none of us are in Australia, which is a great disappointment to me. But we will soon be in Indian Wells.
Yeah.
Which is probably pretty tremendous.
Shouldn't be asking for the violins, really, should we?
Yeah, we will. 3 weeks today, folks, we will all be on planes to Indian Wells. Thanks to On Location, who are sponsoring the podcast at the moment and sending all of us to Indian Wells. They are the premium hospitality and experience provider, and they are taking care of my post-Australia blues, for which I am very, very grateful. So, where should we start our roundup of what has happened in the tennis world over the last couple of weeks. Should we start in Abu Dhabi, where a women's tournament has been taking place? This is, it's not a new tournament this year, is it? It was this one that first popped up during the pandemic and then has sort of lingered, stuck around post-pandemic. Is that right? I've already asked a question nobody can answer. Moving on.
I think this is its first year.
But there was a tournament in Abu Dhabi, definitely in 2021. In that Australian Open, in the Australian Open, everyone had to quarantine.
That's right.
An Abu Dhabi tournament popped up.
Now
for
I
sure.
remember. Yes, yes.
And maybe it didn't happen last year, but so I don't know.
Yes, now I do remember what you mean, the one you mean now. And of course, 2 years ago, the Australian Open was later, wasn't it? It was in February. So now it all adds
up. And qualifying was in the Middle East, wasn't it? It was all
some strange
things happened. It's okay for everyone to have wanted to block that period out of their minds. let's dwell on it no longer. The new incarnation of Abu Dhabi was won for what we think might be the first time by Belinda Bencic. She beat Ludmila Samsonova in a brilliant final, 1-6, 7-6, 6-4 for Bencic. I really think of these tournaments, sort of this portion of the season, these size events, I think of these as the Belinda Bencic sweet spot. It would not surprise me at all if she ends up putting together a streak in Dubai. She's had a lot of success in Dubai before, hasn't she? Like, it does not surprise me at all that Belinda Bencic is having this success, and yet I very rarely predict it for her at Grand Slams, and that question mark still very much remains for me, particularly after that performance she put in against Sabalenka at the Australian Open. But, Matt, she was brilliant this week, and it was a brilliant final against Samsonova, wasn't it? I feel like you watch a lot of Ludmila Samsonova. Is that how you feel as well?
That's right. And I think I was drawn to this match because this was the drama match from the 2021 Billie Jean King Cup finals, where the Russian Tennis Federation sort of manipulated their team in order to get Samsonova as their number one against Bencic, because Samsonova had a really good head-to-head record against Bencic. She led it 2-love going into that final a couple of years ago. She obviously won that match as they won the Billie Jean King Cup. So she came into this final against Bencic with a 3-0 head-to-head lead against her. And I watched the first set of this match and thought, well, this is clearly just one of those matchups in tennis that favours one player so much more than the other, because this was 6-1 in about half an hour, and Samsonova was absolutely unplayable. 16 winners, 5 unforced errors, like amazingly good. And I think it's huge credit to Bencic that she managed to stick in there and extend the rallies a bit and just sort of force Samsonova's level to come down. Like it was almost unsustainable. It was so good. And as it turned out, it was. And yet she still had to save 3 championship points, Bencic, in the second set tiebreak. It was back and forth. It was dramatic. And then she went through and won the final set. And what it means is that she's only lost 2 matches all year, Bencic. The one you were referring to against Sabalenka at the Australian Open. But, you know, I agree. Like, I think the way that match played out was a little bit disappointing from Bencic in the second set. She kind of went away there. She didn't have the grit that she showed in this match, for example, against Samsonova. But obviously everyone lost to Sabalenka at the Australian Open. And then she lost as well to Iga Świątek at the start of the year, you know, the world number one. Other than that, she's won 2 titles this year. And I agree, there's still a definite question mark over the slams and over that sort of resilience in the slams. But I do think her general level is going up a little bit, Bencic. I was really, really impressed with her in this week and in this final in particular.
I can't remember exactly the timing of the discussion, but it was either the very end of last season as a result of, off the back of Bencic being instrumental in the Billie Jean King Cup victory for Switzerland, or it was in one of our Australian Open preview podcasts. And we were all saying, look, the tennis is obviously there from Bencic. We all love the tennis. And you, Matt, said, I want to see her dig her heels in a Grand Slam match. And I that clicked for me. I was like, yes, that's exactly it. That is what I am unconvinced about with Belinda Bencic. And this is exactly what we saw from her yesterday against against Samsonova. Totally dug her heels in, those three championship points saved. And yet I can't really think of any Grand Slam matches where I've seen that happen. And, given that women play the same format at Grand Slams as what they play at tour level, you wouldn't expect there to be such obvious sort of differences in how players are able to perform at the pointy moments. And yet, you know, we've seen it with Pliskova, haven't we, repeatedly in the past, sort of failing to peak at the right moment, failing to be sort of in absolutely prime mental condition at a slam when it counts the most. And I don't know, I don't understand it from Belinda Bencic, because she so clearly has it in her.
That could be part of it, that she's coming up against players who are peaking at the Grand Slams and are therefore a more formidable force for those two out of three sets. I think a degree of panic can set in. You just don't have the time. And yes, that's the same yesterday, but Samsonova at a peak is not going to be the same as Sabalenka was at her peak a few weeks ago. And I do think the sheer stakes of a Grand Slam can come into play, the size of the stadium, everything else. I mean, I think Bencic has just got a clean slate in her mind, because she's got that off her back of winning the Billie Jean King Cup. That really mattered, I think, to her. She has got a new coach. There's a new sort of start for her effectively this year, and it seems to me that she's determined to make the most of her career, which is all I want from her. If she's not good enough in the end, or if somebody else is better, fine, but I think that there's been too much left on the table in her career to this point. And yes, it is quite Belinda Bencic like for her to go and win Abu Dhabi like this and not necessarily back it up at a major tournament in the future, but this is a few weeks now. This is end of last year, followed up by a decent slam showing. Not perfect, but decent. Certainly not a flop. And now she's gone and won a title, particularly from a set down against a player she struggled with. I'd have said that. And she's beaten some other good players along the way this week. So I think that's a heck of a good effort.
Mm, yeah, I agree. And I think in the past where I've seen that grit and that resilience has been in Billie Jean King Cup. And I think for her to now be sort of doing that on the tour, I think is maybe a step up as well. Like, she's such a contrast, Bencic, because her tennis is so smooth. You know, that's why she's on the backhand list, because it's just a very aesthetically pleasing game that she has. And yet, when she marries that with grit and resilience, it becomes a really great combination. But finding that sort of perfect balance of the two, I think can be quite tricky. And yeah, she's yet to demonstrate that in slams, but I do think the overall sort of progress and sort of trajectory that she's on is a really good one at the moment.
She's not playing Doha this week, is she? But she is playing Dubai, which seems like smart scheduling to me, I think. I was worried that she would be playing all three back to back, but yeah, which must be tempting, you know, given you're in the area, it's local.
It's but difficult, you know, isn't it? That scheduling element, I think, is really difficult. I mean, talking to Pam the other week about, well, which tournament should Donna Vekic play, and she likes the indoors, and she's playing Linz this week, And you can play lights out tennis or have a fantastic few days, but you could completely wear yourself out and not have enough left for the next shift of time zone and conditions and with loads more points on the line. It isn't easy. And yet I kind of enjoy these tournaments as sort of a fact-finding mission as a tennis fan and spectator. We've discovered a load of new players and we've discovered a load of new form from players that maybe I hadn't thought too much about for a while.
Yeah, that's actually a really brilliant way of looking at it. I feel like this is a time of year when us, like the hardcore, the nerdy tennis fans, get into the trenches and we do data gathering to bring to everybody else and say, look, when you're ready to tune back into tennis again, these are the people you should be looking out for. These are the people that you should be excited about. And that we expect to be relevant, but will almost certainly be completely wrong.
And I lean on your brother a little bit. He'll sometimes throw a seed in of a player that he's watching that I haven't turned on yet.
I tell you what, Math was talking about Artur Fies before we were talking about Artur Fies. He was very like, oh, will he jolly come lately?
Luca Nardi's
been very much
dropped.
Stopped talking about Luca Nardi because he's basically not won a match since he picked him.
The key with all of that,
everything.
Isn't it? You know, just go early, throw a few out, and then
one
stay
of them
quiet
land.
About the ones that completely dive, and then just, you know, big up the ones that you make good on.
Just before we move on to talk about the exciting youngsters that have emerged on the ATP side this week. In Linz, David, that you mentioned, Anastasia Potapova beat Petra Martic 6-3, 6-1 to win the title there. She's a funny one, Potapova, because she does have these results. You know, that's a cracking week for her. And yet she's so rarely really relevant, Potapova. Mm. I think one win over Angelique Kerber at the French Open, but, you know, Kerber at the French Open, not the same player as at any other slam.
And a prodigious,
you know,
junior, wasn't she? Didn't she
prodigious
win Wimbledon
junior.
Juniors?
Yeah, she did. You know, obviously a good player, but I just feel like she doesn't make us talk about her very often. Maria Sakkari, as you said in the WhatsApp group, Matt, obviously lost in another semi-final. Yeah, I mean, this is sort of her pattern now, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, she beat Donna Vekic in the quarters, I think that would have been, and played well in that match. That was a great contest. It was really close. I think they're quite good friends, aren't they? They certainly had a lovely moment at the net afterwards, but it was one of those matches that didn't get in the way at all. You know, it was still extremely sort of fiercely contested, which I really enjoyed. And honestly, I looked at the players left in that draw, and I think a year ago, I would have thought Sakkari will go on to win that tournament. That was when I still sort of had a lot of belief in Maria Sakkari. Mm. But honestly, the last year has chipped away at that, and I didn't back her to close it from that position. And in the end, that's what's happened. But she's very aware of that. I know, like, she doesn't need everyone telling her that she can't win semi-finals or close tournaments where she's supposed to win. But I just don't know how it's going to be resolved, sort of thing.
Yeah, okay, we'll stop telling her. We'll move on. We'll move on quickly to Dallas. And what I'm going to confidently say that this is a new event, I think, ATP Dallas, right? No, oh God,
they,
I got this wrong.
I think they had Dallas last year, right?
Is it? It's Austin that's new. It's the Austin WTA event.
Austin's new. That's right, Catherine. Well
Next
done.
Next week, that's new. They're both Texas.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Dallas, it was Fort Worth, which was new.
Yeah, that was new too.
Dallas was new last year, won by Riley Opelka last year.
Right.
Riley's just writing in to complain, having won it.
How on earth could I have forgotten that? Well, in its second year, the title in Dallas has been won by Wu Yibing. Wu is the first Chinese player in history not only to win an ATP title, but even to reach an ATP final. He's the highest ATP ranked Chinese player in history now. This was his first career top 10 win over Taylor Fritz in the semifinals. Saw quite a bit of that match. He's the first Chinese male player ever to get a top 10 win. And then he went on to beat John Isner 6-7, 7-6, 7-6 in the final. This guy is electric. He's an electric tennis player. He's an electric story. That final was it was electric in an extremely bizarre turn of events. I was the only one of the three of us last night, it emerged, that was watching the Super Bowl. I texted the group asking some questions about NFL because obviously I was completely confused. And Matt replied saying, I'm actually watching the final in Dallas of the ATP Tour event, and David was in bed. So I was like, what is this weird world where I'm watching NFL on my own?
You weren't even watching the Super Bowl. You were watching the pre-game show. And even
yes,
started
because, Matt,
it.
I didn't realise how extensive the pre-game was. I realise now that any NFL fans that also listen to this podcast must have laughed their pants off at me while I'm having little rants about the faff in tennis. Because tennis knows nothing of faff, it turns out. I mean, NFL has corned it, it's patented faff. It's got a monopoly on faff. I couldn't believe the extent of the faff.
You know the F in NFL stands for faff.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't bloody surprise me. I mean, I thought I'd watched the national anthem. I'd watched everybody tear up. While someone was singing about America, lovely. And then it turned out that wasn't the national anthem. Somebody else gets wheeled out, Chris Stapleton, I think. There was a brief moment when I thought it was Blake Shelton, not Blake Shelton, someone else with long hair that sings country music. And then he started pumping out the actual national anthem. And everyone started tearing up at that. And I thought, okay, we're good to go. And then there's some sort of military event. And then there's a fly pass. Then some cheerleaders come out. And all the while, there's about sort of 1,200 people standing around on the pitch. And you're like, which one of these is a professional sports person? And who's everybody else? Oh, I couldn't believe it. Anyway, while I was just marvelling at that, Matt was watching Wu Yibing do incredible things.
I was. I mean, this match was mainly about the tiebreak at the end. I mean, it was a decent final up till then, but the tiebreak was as dramatic as you will ever see. Really, they both saved multiple match points. Isner had a volley on top of the net on one of his match points, which he dumped into the net. And I think that was his moment to win it. His forehand slightly let him down. Isner had a few times where he was sort of in position to take control, but just a little bit wayward. But really, it was all about Wu Yibing. I mean, Isner used the word unflappable to describe him, and I thought that was actually... that was right on. And he gave a quote after beating Fritz, which will sort of ring true for anyone who listened to our Monica Seles relived episode, where Mary described Monica Seles as one of her defining features was playing without really knowing the score. And Wu Yibing said after beating Fritz that he does that. He plays without thinking about the score, without thinking about winning or losing. And I think
superpower.
I think that really comes across in how he plays. He's locked in, but he's loose at the same time. And he's a fantastic shot maker. David, you put on our Twitter that he's got these whiplash ground strokes, and that was really what stood out to me as well. Combined with great athletic movement, he can kind of do everything, and he played Shapovalov and he played Fritz, and he made them look less like the shot makers that they are, because he was the one coming up with the amazing shots, and that really stood out to me.
He made Taylor Fritz look like a sort of grinder, like a really ordinary grinder.
They're heaving the ball at him, and he's just sort of retaliating. It was like, I would imagine if you had a Jedi playing tennis, it's like he's got a lightsaber rather than a tennis racket. He's just deflecting these balls, and they're going off
at
a million miles an hour back in the other direction. And he can inject that pace with seemingly the same shot. He's not suddenly throwing his whole body into it to generate this crazy pace of shot, this point-ending power from a very slight frame. I mean, he's listed at 6 feet tall. That is a joke. He isn't. I know he was standing next to 6'10" John Isner, but he's not a tall man. He's super fast around the court, but he has the power off the ground of somebody, well, with a bigger frame. And I suppose it does remind me, if I go back in years, of an Agassi-type ball striker, and the way he returns and makes you pay as a serve and volleyer. And I mean, John Isner was not backing down, and Isner plays like a big man. He's got big man's tennis of going for it. And even if he misses, he doesn't make the mistake of trying to play counter-punching tennis as a 6'10" man. He plays massive tennis, and he had match points. He's got the tie breaks that he wants, and yet Wu Yibing just doesn't blink. He doesn't. Unflappable is a great way of putting it. He just has the most brilliant demeanor to hurt you with.
And he's a name that we knew about and first heard about 5 or 6 years ago. He was a prodigious junior, Orange Bowl finalist in 2016, lost that Orange Bowl final to Mirmir Ketsmanovic, just to give you an idea of sort of what class he was part of. And then the following year, I think he reached the final of the Australian Open boys tournament and won both the singles and the doubles at the US Open juniors that year. And in so doing, became the first Chinese male to win a Grand Slam title. That was a huge deal. You know, we did our Tennis Relived episode on Li Na and talked about how she completely changed the game for Chinese tennis. But it really was very particularly Chinese women's tennis in the first instance. And everybody was waiting for the wave of men to arrive. And it felt like he was going to be the first one. And he really was talked about at the time. So where's he been, I hear you ask? You know, he's 23 years old now. Well, he had a terrible injury, I think at the end of the 2018 season, just as he's sort of making his first inroads onto the main tour. Elbow injury, I think, had to have a pretty significant surgery. And then, of course, I don't know if anybody remembers this, there was a global pandemic.
Rings a bell.
And he sort of got grounded and stuck in a cycle, stuck in a sort of vortex in China because of the injury and the timing of it. His sort of comeback from that, you know, he was laid off for a long time with that injury, massive deal, surgery, etc. But by the time he was sort of ready to come back, he was stuck in a vortex of only being able to play national low-level events. It's like he's been held back from the world of top-level professional tennis, and he's just been unleashed on us all, which is a really exciting project. It's like he's been incubating in a chrysalis, and now he's emerging as a butterfly. It's really cool. Mm.
It was quite interesting that he played Shapovalov, because they're both 23, and they've both had the complete opposite experiences. Like, as you said, like the opposite of what Wu Yibing has gone through is what Shapovalov, hugely hyped, living on the tour as a you know, young player, having to develop on the tour in the spotlight, whereas Wu Yibing, the complete opposite. And, you know, he was ranked outside the top 1,000 this time this time last year. He tried making a comeback in January last year, got injured again. And then it wasn't until the summer that he won a load of challenger matches to get his ranking up, qualified at the US Open last year, won a couple of rounds, and played Daniil Medvedev on Arthur Ashe, but it was on the same night as Serena Tomjanovic. It was the match that followed. And that sort of tells you the story of Wu Yi being there as well. You know, he should have had the great spotlight moment there, and yet, you know, he was following Serena, and I'm not even sure we covered that match that night because Serena was such a big story. Like, again, he was sort of in the shadows a little bit. But now, as you said, he's up, I think, into the top 60 now, maybe even higher. And it's like his career has been totally rebooted and relaunched. And he's got a game that I think is going to cause players a lot of trouble. I think it's going to make him very popular with fans. Like, that was another thing that I picked up on, that even though he was playing Fritz and Isner in America, felt like he had quite a lot of support there. I think they really warmed to him. I think Blair Henley, who was doing the interviews, did a really good job after the matches of sort of bringing out some of his personality as well. He's done a lot of model photo shoots, and at one point he sort of did a big pose for the crowd and sort of pouting, and yeah, he was really engaging with the crowd. I think they liked all that, and just a great sort of person to have injected into the ATP tour. You know, just feels like that he can really help sort of invigorate and bring some life into these sorts of weeks, I think.
Yeah, but actually that's something, and when we come on to talk about Otto Fis as well, it feels like we needed this really on the men's tour. A couple of lads who could come out and just make you think, oh, fresh blood, you know, new players, people without baggage, people with prodigious talent, excitement. And I don't want to be mean to those that have tried and failed in the last couple of years to upset things for the top guys, but it has been quite disappointing, Alcaraz aside. I mean, Holger Rune has given some sense that he may have something for the future that can live alongside that, but Alcaraz aside, it has been pretty dull, really, in the next generation of players, a lot of them. And this week, just, you add them to Ben Shelton, and then you put Alcaraz and Rune in, and there's just a pack of people there that you just want to follow. I don't know whether they'll all make it, whether they'll all be as good as each other. There'll be some that drop off, but I care about following what happens to Wu Yibing and Artur Fis.
Well, should we talk about Artur Fis, because he keeps on coming up, and a lot of people will be going, what is this? He didn't win the title in Montpellier this week, but he was the story. A wild card, 18 years of age, again a prodigious junior talent, a Frenchman, made it all the way to the semi-finals. The youngest Frenchman to reach the semi-finals at a tour-level event since Richard Gasquet in Metz in 2004. Don't know whether that's a stat that he'll necessarily want to hear about, because it wasn't a good thing, was it, for Richard Gasquet, really, to get all the attention and the hype that he got as a, what, 15-year-old back then? But anyway, he ended up beating Gasquet, beating Roberto Bautista Agut, which, I know he's not quite the player he once was, but that still is a heck of a rite of passage for a young player, I think. And beat Grégoire Barré as well, and gave it a good go against Jannik Sinner in the semi-final. Sinner eventually going on to win the title, beating Maxime Cressy, 7-6, 6-3 in the final. Cressy having beaten Holger Rune in the semis. But because of Artur Fis, Maxime Cressy is not going to get the volume of airtime on this tennis podcast that he might feel like he warrants. Because I find Artur Fis so exciting.
Why?
Well, look, he's obviously got the game, hasn't he? He's got that fast arm. He fast around the court, so quick around the court, can conduct a crowd. I couldn't, I mean, I can believe he's 18. I knew he was that young because I'd been seeing his name in junior draws over the course of the last year or so. I can't honestly say that I'd seen him play, but I was aware of his name. But he looks older, doesn't he? He's got that Félix Auger-Aliassime thing of you know, physically Félix Auger-Aliassime looked the finished article sort of as soon as he emerged onto the scene, and I'm sure Artifice is not at all the finished article physically, but he looks well developed and strong and like he can handle it all, you know, and he's got the chutzpah, David.
Mm-hmm.
That is the magic ingredient that I'm looking for, yeah, in all these kids.
He sure has.
He's got that balance of swagger and hashtag humbleness. Like swagger that's not annoying.
Yeah. That takes some finding, doesn't it? That is a difficult balance to strike.
That's the secret ingredient for me.
As a player and as a presence, he reminded me a lot of Alcaraz. In terms of his speed around the court and the way he hurts you from both sides. I mean, you get the ball on his forehand, he is coming after you. It doesn't matter who you are, where the ball is. He wants to hurt with every shot. And yet it's not wild. It doesn't feel wild to me anyway. Alcaraz is the most comparable player in terms of watching him. He makes me gasp in a similar way. Shots that I expect to be a rally ball, and he's throwing his body into them, and he's trying to take the racket out of your hand, no matter who you are. And I mean, look, he gave it a right good go against Jannik Sinner. He got a set point against him. I think Sinner showed, again, he's the man, he's the kryptonite to Alcaraz, isn't he? Okay, he lost to him at the US Open, but he hurts Alcaraz because he's able to absorb those incredible, powerful blows with his skier-like agility and foundations and send the ball back at you. And he's much more the finished article, Sinner. He's a kind of seasoned player now, even though he's only been on the tour for 3 years. This kid's raw. He's like a colt. You know, he's straight out. He's just learned how to stand up and, oh, my word, look at my legs. I'm off. And he's just amazing to watch. And just, like you say, the way he gets engaged with a crowd, it's feel good. It's just everybody's happy to be there.
Yeah, it made me wish I was there. I'm going to be very interesting to see him outside of France, because French players in France, I think my brother did some data analytics on this. They are as a nation, or as a tennis cohort, they are the most amplified generally by performing in at home tournaments. You know, Hugo Gaston seems only to be able to play in,
I knew his in, I name mean, was coming
it
up.
Might even be as limited to Paris, not even necessarily the rest of France.
Imagine Fils when I get to watch him on Longlen.
Oh my goodness. Wow. But the point I was making was the opposite to that. It's, you know, can you do it on a wet day in Stoke? And I think he can. I think he can. But I want to see it just to make sure. But I also want to see him on Longlen, just like we saw Hugo Gaston on Longlen last year, didn't we? Taking on Alex de Minaur. That was one of my moments of the French Open 2022. So there's nothing wrong with being a French specialist, but if we're hyping this guy as, you know, someone to be invested in for years to come,
want him to go,
I would
global,
like it if he could perform in more than one country, ideally. Anything to say on Maxime Cressy? Is he happening?
He's performing very creditably, Catherine, and he.
You've really tempered your language.
No, I mean, I think this was a real achievement, really. You know, because he's had a tough time for the last 8-10 months, and he just kept on coming forward, didn't he, with his serve volley game. I think he got to the doubles final as well last week. And you know, to beat Rune, who's another one a bit like Wu Yibing, he's able to make life difficult for the big guys with his shot making, his returns, and yet he didn't win. Cressy just wore him down and eventually won, and just won the one extra big point, really, or two. But it was, I think he's probably going to have quite an Isner-like career. Maybe not as good as Isner's had, but he knows what he is, Cressy. He's coming forward. He's going to keep serving big, volleying, asking you to pass him. And most of the time, there'll be somebody who can. And this time, it was Jannik Sinner. But he'll beat an awful lot of players who just cannot deal with this relentlessness.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, tennis podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
In Córdoba in Argentina, two Argentinians reached the final. Sebastian Baez beat Federico Correa. I got the right Correa, folks. Well done, me. 6-1, 3-6, 6-3 in the final there. Just staying in South America for a week. The big news, or for a moment, the big news from there is that Carlos Alcaraz is returning to the tour. He's playing in Buenos Aires this week at the 250 event. It's his first match since he retired against Holger Rune in Paris with that oblique tear. I know the oblique tear isn't what kept him out of the Australian Open. That was a subsequent injury to his leg, wasn't it? But this is the first time we've seen him play, or will have seen him play in 2023. He'll face either Fabio Fognini or Laszlo Gera in his first match. Cameron Norrie, Lorenzo Musetti, Dominic Thiem, Diego Schwartzman, the main players in the draw there. I'm so glad he's coming back. I'm anxious about it because it's been a long time and I just don't want him to be diminished in any way or be any more fearful, or I don't know. I just want him to be exactly as he was when he won the US Open, really. And maybe that's impossible. Maybe he'll be better. I don't know. But I'm excited to have him back.
Yeah, me too. I think there's a lot going on with Alcaraz, isn't there? There's the, is he over his injury and has that impacted him? And then there's this new status that he has. You know, he was the world number one and he won a slam. Like, he's been pretty open that those were his goals already. Like, I think I think it was Nadal or maybe Federer, one of the greats, who said something like, you don't dream of winning multiple of everything. You know, you dream of winning one and getting to number one. Like, that, those are the lofty goals. And he's done that already and so quickly. And I think having to readjust now and find new goals. And I think he's spoken about his goal sort of now being to actually, like, improve his game rather than set specific sort of title goals, which I think is quite interesting because, you know, I genuinely do think he can still improve as a tennis player quite a lot, which is what makes him so exciting as well. He's already this good and he's got so far still to go. But yeah, lots going on with Alcaraz, and maybe he'll need some time, but I think he doesn't strike me as someone who's going into an event thinking, yeah, second round would be good, that would be good progress. Like, I think he's going to be wanting to win, isn't he?
Yeah.
And sort of getting that balance right, I think, will be important for him as well.
I think perhaps what makes me just a little bit nervous is that situationally, the position he's in is reminiscent a little bit of what Dominic Thiem went through after he won his maiden Grand Slam. He both experienced that mental and emotional readjustment and got injured at the same time. And we don't really know where one factor ends and the other begins for Dominic Thiem in terms of, you know, the wilderness that he's been in for the last couple of years. He now seems to be completely fully fit and yet just a shadow of the player that he once was. I still have some hope, but I know you two are slightly more pessimistic on the Dominic Thiem front. Now, look, the similarities do end there. You know, Alcaraz is a lot younger than Dominic Thiem. He's accumulated a lot less baggage on the way, as you say. His success came very quickly, whereas Dominic Thiem felt like he was sort of pushing a rock uphill for years against, you know, Nadal and Djokovic and desperately working and waiting for his breakthrough. So I'm not worried that, you know, he's going to spend the next 2 years in the wilderness like Dominic Thiem, but just that combination of those two very significant factors that you've just described, Matt, it does just give me a little pause for thought, I suppose, with Alcaraz, that we shouldn't just assume it's going to click.
Like, I wonder whether he needs the kind of season that Iga Świątek had in 2021, where, do you remember, she was like the most consistent player. She was the only one who reached the second week of all the slams. She maybe didn't have the big results like she had in 2020, breaking through and winning Roland Garros, but she laid a lot of foundations and improved her game and was just consistently there. And then obviously we know what she did in 2022. I wonder whether, like, I don't think Alcaraz would sign up for that now because he wants the big success. But at the same time, if he did have a season like that, I don't think it would necessarily be the worst thing for him.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, actually. There are, in terms of other events that are happening this week, I mentioned Doha, where Belinda Bencic isn't playing, but Świątek is. She's the top seed. She could face Danielle Collins in her first match. Ridiculous. Jessica Pegula also playing there. Incidentally, she released a really incredible Players Tribune article this week, which I'd recommend that you go and have a read of if you want to learn a bit more about Jessica Pegula as a person and her journey over the last year or so. Caroline Garcia and Coco Gauff playing in Doha as well. Could have Bedossa Haddad Maia in the opening round. Sakari Zheng, Zheng Xinwen, that is. Sorry, Krejcikova, Kudymetova. Bedossa's an interesting one, isn't she? Because she's tumbling down the rankings as the points come off. Just like Annette Contaveit is just tumble down the rankings as these points from the end of 2021 come off her ranking. And so she's going to start having these incredibly tricky first rounds, which, when you're just desperate for wins and confidence any way you can, you know, it's easy to get just stuck in a cycle, isn't it? So going to be interesting for players like that. The ATP is, as well as being in Buenos Aires this week with Carlos Alcaraz, they're in Delray Beach as well. Taylor Fritz playing there, Tommy Paul, Denis Shapovalov, Miomir Kecmanovic, Ben Shelton is in the draw there. Marcus Giron in round one for him. I will be tuning into that for sure. And the ATP is also in Rotterdam this week for a 500 event. Stefanos Tsitsipas faces Emil Ruud-Savory in round one. Rublev takes on Dumitru, and Medvedev faces Alejandro Davidovich Fokina. Felix Auger-Aliassime, Holger Rune, Yannick Sinner, Stan Wawrinka, Alexander Zverev, Hubert Hurkacz, Borna Coric, all in the draw there as well. Few other bits to wrap up from the last couple of weeks. We had Davis Cup qualifiers. Matt, you were keeping a very close eye on a fair few of those.
Yes, I was. And just to pick out a few highlights, there was a great tie between Switzerland and Germany, which went all the way to the fifth match. And it's quite interesting. Switzerland have got this quite youthful team. Marc-Andrea Hüsler's in his sort of mid-20s. He won a couple of matches. They've got Dominic Stricker as well, who's young and coming through. And yet it was Stan Wawrinka who secured the winning point against Daniel Altmaier. So I think that was great for him. We watched Great Britain go to Colombia and win in, you know, extreme altitude, and despite losing the opening singles match there, Dan Evans lost, but then teamed up with Neil Skupski in that doubles partnership that, you know, I think everyone had been sort of wanting to see. And Dan Evans had sort of put his neck on the line really and said, you know, basically play me with Neil Skupski and I'll deliver, and he did, because they beat Cabal and Farah to help Britain through there. And then probably the two most sort of interesting results were that Korea came from 2-0 down for the first time ever to beat Belgium, and Johan van Herk, the Belgium captain, that was his final tie. So tough way to go for him, who's been really successful with Belgium, but great result for Korea. So they're through, as are Finland for the first time. I was following this tie. They're through to the Davis Cup finals for the first time after beating Argentina. And what was interesting about this is they were on the cusp of qualifying last year in the exact same arena. You know, they were 2-1 up last year against Belgium and lost both reverse singles. This time they managed to get over the line with Emil Ruud-Savory clinching the winning point. So yeah, lots of good ties. We don't know the groups yet for the finals. That draw will be done soon. But yeah, Croatia, France, USA, Switzerland, Great Britain, Serbia, Chile, Sweden, Czech Republic, Finland, and Korea all winning in Davis Cup a couple of weeks ago.
Good stuff, in the words of Darren Walton. Which, if you don't understand that reference, then become a friend of the Tennis Podcast and listen to our Australian Open review show for the iconic Darren Walton. What else did we have? We had a first career title in Hua Hin, Thailand last week for Zhu Lin, who, if you're thinking, where do I know that name from? She had that run at the Australian Open, beat Maria Sakkari there, didn't she? Lost to Victoria Azarenka, but really showed what she could do with the Australian Open. And Victoria Azarenka said after her win, she was really taken with her, wasn't she? She said, you might not have heard of her, but she's coming. And I find it so impressive that she immediately went out and backed that up by going to win her first title in Hua Hin. And I don't quite understand where she's been for the last decade of her career.
Actually,
she's so good.
Azarenka, the last time I heard her say something like that about an opponent was Iga Świątek about 3 years ago, just before she went and won the French Open. I remember they played each other, I think, in in one of the events shortly before that, either not the US Open or the one before that. And she just said, you know, I'm really taken with her. And so not trying to suggest that Zhulin's going to do exactly the same thing or anything like that. But you never know. Do you, a player like that who's seasoned, who recognises ability, I think is worth listening to.
Yeah, I think she's really good, Zhulin. Really, really good. As is Alicia Parks, who won the title in Lyon. She beat Caroline Garcia there. It was fun times. Alicia Parks is fun times. She's all the things that we were just saying about Wu Yi being an artifice. Throw her in there as well. She is somebody that I will seek out, follow, wish well, and pay very close attention to.
Yeah. Oh, I loved her run in Lyon. I think she's been a bit of a tennis insider's pick to sort of have a good season. I remember actually seeing a Q&A on Sloane Stephens's Instagram where she picked out Alicia Parks and Katie Vollinets to have big seasons in 2023, and that's gone well already, because obviously Vollinets made the third round in Melbourne, beating Kudermatova. So maybe Stephens has got a really sort of good eye as well for picking out players. But yeah, she's great. I think the main thing that stands out is her serve. Like, it's fast, it's accurate. She hits a lot of aces, and in that final against Garcia, she just served so well under pressure. Like, there was a lot of times where she was maybe break point down or love 30 down, and she just had a big serve when she needed it. And not least at 5-all in the second set, and she's just missed the first serve, and the crowd a sort of cheering. You know, it's a pretty partisan crowd. They want Caroline Garcia to win in Lyon. They're cheering her first serve into the net, and she just steadies herself and hits a second serve ace. And not only does that,
so good,
but then gives it back to the French crowd. It was
it was
iconic. It was fantastic. and she is a shot maker. She hit a great tweener lob winner in en route to that title, and she's just, I find her really engaging on court. She's got a lot of sort of interesting mannerisms. She's constantly sort of pointing either to her head or to the sky, and she's willing herself on. I think she expects a lot of herself. She's a great athlete as well, and yeah, that was her first WTA title. It moved her streak indoors at that point was 15 wins in a row, because she won a couple of sort of 1-2-5 events at the back end of last season. She did lose early this week, but obviously she was pretty tired, I think, after Lyon. But yeah, again, just a great presence to have on the tour. I really, really like Alicia Parks. I think she's the real deal.
Yeah, look out for her if you get the chance. There was also a challenger title for Liam Brody in Lithuania. Without dropping a set, he's a friend of the show, and we like to keep an eye on his progress. A couple of bits of other news that you may or may not have heard about from the past week. This from the BBC Sport website. Former world number two Alexander Zverev will not face disciplinary action following an investigation into allegations of domestic abuse. The ATP investigation found there was insufficient evidence to substantiate claims made by the German's former girlfriend, Olya Sharipova. She, in 2020, accused Zverev of violence and emotional abuse during their relationship, which he denies. The ATP decision could be re-evaluated should new evidence come to light. The governing body of men's professional tennis said it commissioned a private investigation company, the Lake Forest Group, to look into the allegations. It conducted extensive interviews with both Sharipova and Zverev and spoke to 24 other people, including family, friends and players. And in a not dissimilar vein, we have the news that Nick Kyrgios admitted assaulting his ex-girlfriend but has avoided conviction. This from the BBC News website. Nick Kyrgios submitted a guilty plea in a Canberra court. This after his lawyers failed to have the charge dismissed on mental health grounds. Kyrgios pushed Chiara Passari onto the pavement during a row in Canberra in 2021, the court heard. The magistrate called the incident a single act of stupidity or frustration and spared him a criminal record. So he pleaded guilty, but the case was dropped. And in terms of sort of our understanding of a legal process situation that allows that to happen, it's pretty confusing to us. And my rudimentary knowledge of the British legal system, having worked in it for a year, is I'm not sure this could happen here. But anyway, it has happened in Canberra. Nick Kyrgios released a statement after the ruling saying he was grateful to the court for dismissing the charges without conviction. He says, I was not in a good place when this happened, and I reacted to a difficult situation in a way I deeply regret. I know it wasn't okay, and I'm seriously, sincerely sorry for the hurt I caused.
Just to say, Catherine, I had a quick word with the ATP about this as well, to see whether they might look into it, given that it is a guilty plea. They said that they do generally get reviewed in the context of the conduct contrary to the integrity of the game provision in the rules. So it's possible there may be a follow-up there, not that we've got any indication that there will be.
Okay, good to know. If there are any updates in that situation, then we will, of course, keep you updated. We should go back to the Australian Open, just because I'd like to go, just take me back, basically. but also because we didn't have time at the time to cover the fact that Shingo Kanida announced his retirement during the tournament at the age of 38, most successful men's wheelchair player of all time. 28 Grand Slam singles titles, 22 Grand Slam doubles titles. I'm going to do some maths for you. That is 50 Grand Slam titles. Ridiculous. Also 4 Paralympic gold medals. He retired as the number one, having spent 582 weeks total on top. That is so cool, retiring as the number one. That's just the absolute coolest. And in terms of his legacy, well, there are now 4 Japanese players in the top 12 of the wheelchair rankings, including a 16-year-old, Takito Oda, who's the world number 3. And we covered him a little bit, didn't we, during the Australian Open. 16, I mean, that's really exciting. And that's Shingo Kanida's living legacy, isn't it? So congratulations on an incredible career, and good luck for whatever's next to him. And we have a correction. I'm not sure. Is this a correction? I don't know. But we would like to point out that it has emerged since our Australian Open final podcast that Novak Djokovic didn't have the 22 emblazoned jacket in his bag throughout the final. The word on the street is that his team had it with them and handed it to him from the stands, and he didn't know about it, which is fine. I'm not like laying blame at anyone's door for the 22 jacket. I just don't like it. Wherever it came from, I don't like it. Stop doing jackets with numbers on tennis.
There is still property bin, isn't there? Full of all of this stuff somewhere.
Yes.
Of the ones that didn't make it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So whoever knows the answer, whether did Djokovic's team secretly have a Calendar Slam jacket or other piece of clothing or equipment that Djokovic was never aware of?
They must have.
My question remains.
It has to have happened, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. But I want the details. Tennis podcast news, folks. We have the winner of our on-location competition to win that fabulous prize package to go to the Miami Open presented by Itaú and have breakfast, potentially with or in the vicinity of your last chance to insert middling level tennis player here. Matt's got one. Off you go.
Well, Yuri Lehechka came to mind, but actually he's doing well.
He's a Grand Slam quarter finalist. Yeah.
I mentioned him the other week, Matt. I was going to go with Radu Albot.
Well, very good. Is he still playing?
Don't
Not
know.
Sure he is. Don't think he'll make main draw in Miami. But anyway,
there's a challenge the week before.
I doubt our winner, Cassie, from Hampton Cove in Alabama, is too bothered about whether Radu Albot will be there for her incredible stay in Miami. Her favourite player is Rafael Nadal. Fingers crossed that Nadal will make it back in time for Miami. Don't know. But anyway, lots of other great players, Cassie. She's a big fan of Matt Stat. Now, Matt Stat will be back for Miami. It hasn't been anywhere other than the newsletter. Anyway, she's a big fan of Matt Stat, and in the mix conversations, in the mix is capitalized here and doesn't even have spaces between the words. Not sure what that's about. She's never been to a professional tennis tournament before. This will be her tour debut, and she plans on taking her dad with her, which is absolutely blooming lovely. So I'm really excited for Cassie, and I will be in Miami. So if we overlap, then I will try and say hi. I mean, if Cassie wants that, she might not want that at all. We will see. So thank you to On Location and Steve Fergal's International Tennis Stores for offering that prize package. The competition has now, of course, closed. But Friends of the Tennis Podcast get a 5% discount to all Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours packages in 2023. So become a friend of the pod to get access to that 5% discount code. You can email us for details or keep an eye on our newsletter. More very important news, which is that we have mascots for this week's show. It is Missy and Grady. They are a cat-dog duo. They are owned by Amy and Wright Bryan and put forward as mascots by Two Fom. And Two says, Missy and Grady are not my pets, but I wanted to support the tennis podcast at a higher level, so I'm submitting the pets of my friends, Amy and Wright Bryan, who introduced me to the tennis podcast several years ago. We all live in the Capitol Hill neighbourhood of Washington, D.C. Missy plays the role of a too-cool-for-school cat. I mean, isn't that the role of all cats? But is secretly an emotional support cat when someone in the Bryan household is feeling under the weather, which is lovely. Grady is a social butterfly, whether it's humans, other dogs like his dog cousin who growled and snarled at him, or neighborhood squirrels. Billie Jean really must be tired because I've just said squirrels and she hasn't even stirred. Squirrels.
She's looking.
He knows how to charm everyone into becoming his friend, whether they like it or not. And two, thank you ever so much for bringing Missy and Grady into our lives, because there is nothing I love more in the world than inter-animal friendships. It's my favourite thing. If I need to lose past sort of 4 hours... then it's go on Instagram and look at a video of an inter-animal friendship and then the algorithm goes, would you like more videos of inter-animal friendships? And my subconscious says, yes, please. And before you know it, it's 1 a.m. thank you very much to Two, to Amy and Wright, and to Missy and Grady for being our mascots for the week. We have our mascots. David, you've got Maisie.
Right, Maisie.
I've got Xenia. Matt has got Darwin. Billie Jean has got Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. Squirrel. Squirrel. getting a head tilt. We have our executive producers and top folks, Jamie, Drew and Hannah. Hello to you all. And we have shout outs, Matt.
We have Bill Hawes, and Bill is from Braintree in Essex, and he celebrated his birthday on the 9th of February. So happy birthday, Bill.
Aww.
Aww,
happy birthday, Bill.
Yeah.
Almost my birthday, buddy.
Like Bill Scanlon, who was a player from yesteryear, even before my day, to be quite honest, but I've heard his name come up once or twice in Tennis Relived.
Yes, and Bill Tilden.
Bill, you've got the same birthday as my oldest friend, Sarah.
Aww.
In fact, my two oldest friends went to primary school together, Sarah and Grace. Our birthdays are the 9th, 10th and 11th of February.
Wow.
Fun fact. Anyway,
extended thank birthday you, Bill. Weekend for you all.
Yes.
Yes. Great.
Yes. And then I remember Abigail Pearson had her birthday on the 12th, but... We're no longer friends.
Happy birthday for yesterday, Abigail.
Who else have we got, Matt?
We have got Curtis Perpetti. Curtis has written, rhymes with spaghetti.
Oh, very helpful, Curtis.
Right, Curtis, thanks for that. Curtis knows the audience.
Curtis is in Toronto and says, let me use this opportunity to petition that Toronto and Montreal should each have a 250 or 500 level tournament in the years where they don't have a 1,000 event.
Okay. Yeah. But wouldn't it get... But generally, when there are 1,000 events on, there are no other...
Indeed.
...events, so it would get lost and obscured. But I'm a big fan of those of Toronto and Montreal.
They could do with one the week before.
Yeah,
they?
Week before, that works.
That's
yeah,
what we'll do.
Fine, sold, done.
Okay.
That's what tennis needs, more events. We've been saying that for a long time. There's just not enough tennis.
And they need us to just sort of make up all the rules on the hoof mid-podcast.
Yeah. Okay. Next shout out. Thank you, Curtis.
Last one today is for Michelle Fenlon in Virginia, USA.
Right, Michelle.
Hello, Michelle. Capital Richmond.
Like Michelle Larcher de Brito.
Oh, Matt Roberts, you are a star. I mean, when was the last time
Very
you heard
good.
Her name? That's a long time ago.
She didn't really happen, Michelle Larcher de Brito, did she?
She had one French Open where everybody was talking about her, I remember. And and then I don't remember too much more after that. But she was absolutely a tennis player. So well done, Matt. Thank you. And thank you, Michelle.
Do we have any further info about Michelle?
Michelle says that she found the pod during the pandemic and it was great during Aww. Those endless dog walks to get fresh air.
Oh, thanks, Aww. Michelle.
Any details on the dog?
No details on the dog, I'm afraid. I would have told you if there were details on the dog.
You would, you would. Get in touch, Michelle. Let us know. Send us pictures. Always welcome. Thank you to all our mascots. Thank you to Dana for introducing the show. If you'd like to introduce the show, or get yourself a shout out or get access to the Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours discount code for 2023, then you can become a friend of the pod via our show notes. And you should very much also subscribe to the newsletter if you haven't already. We will be back with another weekly show on Monday, at which point we'll be just 2 weeks out from Indian Wells, and I might even start packing. Not that I'm excited or anything. So we'll speak to you then. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.